This is CliffCentral.com.
CliffCentral.com, and that's a new useful feature for everybody who hits the roads and everybody who worries about these things, and some scary stuff from Howard Dembowski. If you missed any of it, listen to the podcast. It's available on CliffCentral.com. So Leanne is now going to go and get her.
I've had the ETOL
bills and try and sort them out, and God knows alone what else.
I'm a very compliant person by nature. and I should really have been a compliance officer. But, and I am that person who cries when they're pulled over by a cop.
No.
So you must imagine how frightened I am right now.
Wait, what is a cop's reaction to seeing you crying? Never.
Sometimes she gets away with it, sometimes she doesn't.
Oh, dear.
I want to try to do that next time I'm stopped and see how far I go.
All right, I said we'd get her back in here at some point, but we're going to have Crystal Kay from The Real Housewives of Johannesburg join us in a short while. She was last on the show in November last year, and people loved her, so we thought we'd bring her back, have her come and sit with us. She's recently appeared in the fifth season of Come Dine With Me South Africa, which you may have seen. She competed against fashion designer Gert Johan Kutsier, TV presenter Candice Mutisele, and radio DJ Lucky Duplessis. And we'll talk to her a little bit about Come Dine With Me South Africa and some other things, because she's always good fun to have with us in the studio. So, all right, what's happening in the news, Leanne? What else do we need to know before we get cracking on this morning's fight?
I don't know how to say this. But there's a sex paradise that's happening in Africa on our very continent.
A sex paradise.
For British grands.
What?
Yes, so it's a lot to take in. But the Gambia.
First of all, yes, you say it's a lot to take in. What is a sex paradise? Why British grands? And then we'll get on to the Gambia.
Okay, so there are a couple of hotspots in Europe where it's known, they're known places for people over the age of, well, retirement age, for women to go to,
mm-hmm,
and hook up with young men.
Okay? Young men.
And the Gambia.
Young men.
Is extremely happy to oblige and help out in this regard.
So what, you just go over there if you're a gran.
Yes.
And you could find yourself some hot action.
Yes. So the West African country has been labeled a Tinder dream for geriatrics, where we meet the Randy Grands on the pool in the Granbia, it's been called. Oh, my word. Then this article I'm reading has so many pictures of horny grannies grinding against these Gambian toy boys. There are even Zimmer frames in the picture.
And
as
they're getting busy, these ladies.
They're getting busy. All these silver-haired sirens are out there snogging away. And these are fit young men, really, like gym bodies.
Uh-huh.
They're leaning over and squeezing the saggy bottoms of these grands.
Beautiful.
So, yeah, it's happening. If you want some entertainment, go to a nightclub in Gambia.
I'm proud of us. This is a way we can reposition Africa as a place for European tourism rather than the other way around, where we keep going to Europe.
Barbara, who's from Manchester, says,
Barbara,
who's an 80-something old woman, says, there's so much candy in here, it's hard to control yourself, even at my age.
All right, so Crystal Kay was on The Real Housewives of South Africa, Real Housewives of Johannesburg, South Africa, and she was on Come Dine With Me most recently, and she's been a guest on our show before. Hey, Crystal, how are you doing?
Hey, how are you doing?
Nice to see you.
Yeah, it's nice to see you too.
We thought we'd just hang with you this morning. I'll ask you a little bit about Come Dine With Me just now, but what do you think of this story for these grannies? I mean, isn't this great news?
This, like, I think it gives all of us women hope for later on in our lives.
Yeah, why not? I mean, you know, some people just give up on their sex lives and they reach like 60 or 70.
I mean, do you know what's waiting up
yeah,
for you?
Yeah, it's like, I can't wait to go gray.
In the Gambia.
In the Gambia.
Where is that, by
who
the way?
Knew?
Okay, so the Gambia is a tiny little country. It's basically, it's a river, one embankment of a river. And it's interesting for a number of reasons, but the main one that I remember is a story a couple of weeks ago in the news about how they want to introduce, or they have already introduced, a 4-day work week. So you have a 3-day weekend every week. So this place sounds like paradise, not only from a granny sex point of view.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
Sounds like a good place to live. I mean, who wouldn't want to stop working on a Thursday, have Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and then go back on a Monday for a four-day week? That's, to me, very civilized.
It's all that's a holiday.
Proper, yes. Yeah, right. For sure.
And, I mean, just to quote this article, there are plenty of horror stories about Gambian bumpsters. That's an actual term used to describe unemployed Gambian men who target Western women they see as a meal ticket to the UK. But now there are an increasing number of British grannies who are turning the scam on its head.
Jeez.
Oh, no.
These grannies are having a good time. And some of them look pretty good for their age. These men are having the time of their life as well, making some good money. And these grannies are coming to Africa, so let's support this. Good Lord. Well, first of all, how's Come Dine With Me been? Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I must say that I was put to the task, of course.
Yeah.
And I made the task for myself.
Did you actually do the cooking, or did you find someone?
I did
to
do
help
the
you?
Cooking. I had a little bit of help, I must admit.
Yeah, sure.
I don't cook that much, so it was a huge challenge for me. And yeah, I have to say that I also chose really difficult recipes. I did French. And I did a souffle to start.
Well, that's technically very difficult.
It is, if I say so myself. And then I did a risotto for mains, a chicken and mushroom risotto, which also was, quite difficult. And I actually thought I did quite well. Initially.
How did the others vote? Did they like you? Were they horrible to you?
No, they didn't like me. They didn't like my food. It was too rich for them. They were all on these diets, you know. Oh. They don't eat carbs and this. So it didn't go down very well, the rich French food. And not only that, after it was prepared, we only ate like 5 hours later.
Oh, so it probably tasted horrible.
The souffle had shrunken down,
and the
risotto had literally like gone quite stodgy. So yeah, I didn't get the greatest marks. If you were watching
the show, that's the problem with these food shows.
Yeah.
I mean, even watching something like MasterChef, by the time the judges get to that food,
it's horrible.
It's cold and it's lost its fizz.
But you don't really care about cooking, and I don't. Yeah, we don't. We're not interested in cooking, you and me.
Last time
you were here, you were trying to sell that big house of yours. Did you sell it?
I'm still trying to sell that big house of mine.
No buyers.
So, yeah, anyone out there interested in a beautiful
Georgian? How many
Georgian,
rooms again?
It's got 5 rooms.
5 bedrooms?
It's 1,000 meters squared. It's rolling lawns, 4 acres, and it's beautiful views. So, yeah,
magic.
Come on, everyone. Come over to my house.
I'm sorry. I would have thought you could have sold it by now.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
The market is so flat. It's crazy.
So, all right. Otherwise, things are good?
Yeah, I know. Things are going fine.
All right. I'm very happy.
Few changes.
What?
Well, just, you know, living arrangements, maybe, things like that.
How so, living arrangements?
Well,
don't be cagey with me. We're honest with each other.
I think you have to watch the next episode of The Real Housewives when it airs.
Okay.
And you guys are going to find out quite a lot about things.
Is there drama?
There's definitely a lot of drama, a lot of changes in my life, actually. And I'm saving it all for the show.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So we don't get too much into it.
Yeah, yeah.
Does it involve relationships?
It does. It does involve relationships. It involves, a lot. So.
How are those other women on the show? Because they were not being very nice to you the last time we spoke.
I have no idea how they are.
You don't care about them. If they died in a fire, would you throw them?
I wouldn't be running to save them. Sorry, guys.
That's beautiful.
The honesty.
All right. Well, you. I'm glad you're here with us this morning. So we'll talk about some of the stuff that's going on in the news and get Crystal's thoughts on these things. So, do you do yoga?
Little bit, but I'm not the greatest. We did one round of hot yoga on the show.
Yes.
And it was a huge challenge, and I think I died.
It's also really uncomfortable because it's sweaty and, you know, it's not the greatest.
No, aerobics, dancing.
Some of these women bend over and then they fart, and it's just all very off-putting. I can't imagine you would enjoy that.
No, and also the sergeant major that takes you for the whole thing, and she's like giving you these orders.
Yeah.
I mean, there's not even music. I can't understand that.
It's really, it's just beneath you.
Let's
wouldn't do it if I were you. The reason I'm asking about yoga, though, is apparently some woman had a stroke after she tore an artery doing a yoga pose.
Oh, wow. Right?
Yep, that happened in the US.
God, how unfortunate.
In Maryland.
There you go.
It was a massive stroke. She was attempting a yoga. Why are you making me laugh? She was attempting a yoga handstand pose. Okay.
Uh-huh.
And she was actually recording it on social media when it happened.
Aye.
So she was doing what they call a hollow back handstand pose.
Sounds horrible.
And she started experiencing blurry vision and lost control of her arm.
Hmm.
And the whole stroke feeling lasted for about 5 minutes, and then the pain really hit.
So hold on. She's doing a handstand and recording it on her phone.
No, I think
that's incredible.
Yeah.
It looks like this, okay?
Uh-huh.
So it's not really a handstand. It's more like you're resting on your forearms and you've got your bum in the air and you're doing the split type thing.
All right, so
and you're hollowing out your back.
That looks amazing.
Well,
it isn't so amazing after all that.
You first.
But talking about recording things on your phone,
yeah.
Did you hear about the latest incident
that
was recorded?
What?
I heard about it last night. There was a guy who had a big fight with his girlfriend.
Oh, is this the guy in Botswana with
yes.
the plane?
Yes. What do you think of that?
So let's just tell everybody in case they don't know. It was in the news yesterday, but let's just refresh anyone's memory. So apparently this dude who flies planes, he's a pilot, had an argument with his girlfriend or wife. We're not sure which one it is. And then they had a big fight and he stormed off. She was going to do a baby shower.
Yes.
There was a baby
at a venue
for her. It was near where the planes take off and land, some training school or whatever it was. So he goes off in his plane and he dive bombs the venue twice and he phones a friend of his and says, "Is she still there?" Meaning the girlfriend or wife. And the friend catches on that there's something not good going on and tells everybody to evacuate the area. Takes everybody outside of the building, far enough away for it to be safe, and he says to this guy, "Yes, she's still in there." He then does a suicide smash into this building. The whole place is on fire. There's hardly anything left of the plane.
Cars were burnt, you know, to shreds, and some were dangerously near the fire.
He was obviously killed.
Yeah.
Suicide. But luckily no one else was killed.
Yeah, luckily.
But what a story. Whoa. And it's all captured on video.
That is amazing. Talk about a kamikaze in another whole direction.
My God. And like, this stuff is happening. You know, we've got these stories going on in the Cape of these men who, they, instead of just divorcing their wives, they kill them. We had that Rhoda issue not so long ago. The murder of the wife at the Spear Wine Estate.
That's
where
it.
He tried to make it look like she'd hanged herself. Now we've got this other story about this Constantia businessman. I mean, it's scary out there, and there are a lot of women who have to consider whether or not their husbands or boyfriends or exes might be a little unstable.
It happens more often than you'd like to admit.
And I mean, what are the signs even? How do you know that you're dealing with someone who could be either suicidal or murderous?
I don't know. Often it just escalates so quickly that, you know, there might be some small signs of bad behavior, but you don't actually know how bad it is until it happens. So, a lot of people can turn around and say, "But didn't she know that he was like this?" But it kind of reminds me of the way you, Gareth, described. I said to you once, "Why do people drown in rivers when there is a flood? Surely you know there's a flood, so you go inside." And you said, living on a farm, it actually comes like a wall of water and you don't see it coming and you don't hear it coming. It just happens.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly the same in an abusive relationship. You see the clouds, you know, it's starting to rain, but then the big incident happens before you've even had a chance to suss it out.
That's true. But I also think there is another take on it, which is also that, you know, you've been involved for so long in this relationship and it's a two-way street. So, you know, maybe she also drove him crazy. You know what I'm saying?
Well, there's always the two sides to every story.
Yeah.
But I think for a lot of women, they face the very real danger of violence in relationships. And this is not something that happens all over the world. It's very much a South African problem. We've got a lot of women in this country who are dealing with men who have big chips on their shoulders, big personality problems, issues around finances, issues around the children, all kinds
of jealousy as well.
That's true.
And it's not any culture. It's all cultures. It's all.
Mm. Oh, you could see that. Look at this last story. I mean, these are people in. You would think, you know, if you're flying King Airs around, you're not exactly on the bones of your backside.
Yeah.
And it's a responsible job.
Yeah.
And you go through a number of procedures and tests, and you do hours and hours of flying before you're allowed to fly a plane like that. Clearly, it makes absolutely no difference if you and your wife or girlfriend have an argument, and things get out of control, and you're prepared to fly a plane into her.
I mean, that takes a lot of premeditation.
Anyway, so some scary, scary stuff. I'm wondering, with all of this filming and phones that's going on, because it always used to be, oh, well, you know, everybody's going to have a sex tape one day. But there's going to be a lot more tragic stuff that gets recorded on phones. And these days, of course, you can watch the stuff. I get nervous when I get videos and I can see that there's the potential of something going wrong. I don't like watching these.
Well, look at the New Zealand massacre as well. That was available on film. I haven't seen it, and I'm not going to watch it.
Mm-mm.
But there's really crazy stuff
that's
out there and available to watch.
Do you, when you have people around to your house, do you let them take pictures and film, or do you tell them please not to, Crystal?
Well, I have a lot of people taking photographs all the time in terms of movies, because we do music videos a lot and things like that. So I don't really mind. It's just part of the whole story, you know. But
you're used to being approached now because of Real Housewives. When you go out in the street, then people want to take pictures of you. People are filming you without you even knowing. So there isn't really much privacy. I mean, if you go to a restaurant with a friend of yours, you know that people are going to be taking pictures.
Yeah, no, it happens often. And I've also had to lower my personal boundaries, if you know what I mean, just be a bit more open. Most of the time I've had wonderful experiences with people, so that's also quite refreshing, you know. But every now and then you do have to be careful, because you never know. And also, I'm quite open with regards to my details and things like that too. So I think I take a little bit of a risk. Maybe I could be a little bit more guarded, but I like to be open. I like to chat with the people and get it on the ground level.
Yeah, it's just when it goes wrong, it goes really wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have seen that in America. There have been so many incidents, and, you know, not so much here, thank goodness.
So how long is the Real Housewives going to go for? Because clearly it's working. The producer's happy. They want to keep the show running.
Yeah, I've heard that things are moving on and happening. So, yeah, I don't know too much yet, but hopefully we're going to have it another season. And, yeah. It looks like we'll be hitting the airwaves shortly.
All right, a couple of other things that we've got to get to in the news. Apparently, Tim Cook introduced his company's new streaming service, Apple TV Plus, with the help of Steven Spielberg, Reese Witherspoon, Jennifer Aniston, and Oprah Winfrey. That's quite a power pack of people.
Yeah, I'd say.
So do you want to hear about that quickly?
Yeah, absolutely.
So as if Apple don't already own enough of what we do every day.
Yeah, do they really need celebrities to launch their brand? People are
clearly
waiting for news.
So here's Tim Cook, the CEO of Apple, talking about their new streaming service.
We partnered with the most thoughtful, accomplished, and award-winning group of creative visionaries who have ever come together in one place to create a new service unlike anything that's been done before.
Obviously,
Apple TV Plus.
They're obviously taking on Amazon. They're taking on Netflix. This is their big thing. Would you, with any of those names like Oprah Winfrey and Steven Spielberg and Reese Witherspoon, Jennifer Aniston, would that make you want to stream Apple TV Plus?
Doesn't mean a thing to me.
Imagine what they've paid these celebrities to be a part of this.
Yeah.
I suppose it's Apple. They've got so much money, they don't know what to do with it.
No, because, well, I mean, equally, there could be another four shit-hot celebrities on another brand with a similar product. It wouldn't sway me at all.
I think the price of celebrities is probably going to come down.
Maybe.
Don't say that.
Yeah, no, I'm telling you, celebrity is losing its edge here. If Oprah Winfrey used to be a one-man band for pretty much everything. She was one of the, still is, I suppose, the most powerful woman in media, right? If Oprah puts you on, you get attention. Look at what she's just done with this Leaving Neverland. For her to have to be a part of this basket of goods with Reese Witherspoon and Jennifer Aniston, I don't know if that's been beneath Oprah. Forgive me.
A bit of a sellout, you know.
Yeah, I think she should have maybe said to them, no, I'm not that interested. She doesn't need the money.
Yeah, I think it's because it's Apple. And because it's got this like sacrosanct status in Hollywood. And, you know, celebrities also are, you know, like other people, they tend to do what other people do.
Yeah, sure.
So it's this clique, and it's really a Hollywood clique that's presenting this. And I think that it might have some good take up with the audience. I think it will. I think they're going to deliver this product. And, you know, it's great faces. We all know them.
Yeah.
And Apple, you know, they pretty much know what they're doing. So, yeah, I don't think they can go wrong. But I do agree that celebrities are used left, right, and center for everything.
No, it's like this whole influencer thing is just, I'm a bit tired of it. It's like I don't really care if all these people are on there. Rather give me the product itself than sell me the celebrities. But let's hear what he says.
This is my first time at Apple.
Spielberg.
You know, the place where imagination and technology join forces to change the world through sight and sound and touch.
This is so exciting. Reese and I are so proud.
Jennifer Aniston.
Be a part of this exciting launch with Apple, officially announcing our new project.
God, they must have been paid a lot of money.
That's the other thing.
I've never heard Jennifer Aniston and Steven Spielberg put on such a show. Huh? Normally they're just going like wave and...
Have a picture taken.
Yeah, have a picture taken with Tim Cook. Reese Witherspoon's all made up here. She's smiling like a mongoloid at the camera. Jennifer Aniston's got her titties out. It's looking great. It's
morning good. Show.
Hello, am I late?
I got it. Hey. Get over here.
Steve Carell.
Steve, get over here. Hi,
Steve. Hello. Hi, I saw the two of you on screen up there.
Oh, they're doing a whole act here. This is a whole act.
Yeah, so that's pretty cool. That's something different.
All right, okay, all right.
I didn't know if
I'm
it was
on
my
their side, okay?
No, Steve, we have to tell you, we're so thrilled that you're a part of the show because, honestly, you can't have an honest look at complex relationships between men and women with just women.
Well, I am just happy to provide the manliness.
By teaching preschoolers about coding, we're getting...
Apparently, even the Sesame Street gang are going to come in and teach the kids how to do coding.
The opportunity to change the world.
So I have two documentaries in the works.
Oprah Winfrey. You want to hear what she's busy with?
One exploring the toll of sexual harassment, assault, and violation in the workplace. The working title is Toxic Labor. The other, yet unnamed, multi-part series focuses on mental health. For me, there's nothing more thrilling than being transported by a brilliant book. Nothing. And the only thing actually more gratifying than an extraordinary read is being able to share that experience with others. And we're going to do just that by building the biggest, the most vibrant, the most stimulating book club on the planet.
She's also selling hard.
Yeah, she is. Yeah,
well. Interesting. Look, it might just be the biggest thing. It sounds like it's a good lineup of people. Maybe Apple are onto it.
Yeah, I think they are. I like that. I like what I hear.
So Apple TV Plus, with all of these stars, they're partnering with Goldman Sachs to make their own credit card, which is due out this summer.
Yeah, that's another thing.
The Apple credit card, no plastic required. An optional physical card is available, but it's a laser-etched titanium rectangle. Does that sound like something you'd want?
I think a lot of people are going to want to have that flashing
in their
wallets. Definitely.
Crystal's up for another credit card. So there's some exciting stuff going on in the world of media. I don't know. How do you like the idea of Oprah's two series, one on harassment, sexual harassment in the workplace, and the other one on mental health?
I think they're great topics, and she'll make them fantastic.
Yeah.
Anything she touches is great.
Yeah, she seems to be pretty good at these things. Certainly, there's no lack of ability when it comes to Oprah. There's no lack of talent there, and she can pretty much wrangle anyone she wants into an interview. So I think it'll be quite good. All right. Well, that's what we've got in terms of those news stories. Anything else from your side, Leanne?
Quite a sad story, actually. We all remember the Sandy Hook incident.
That was that school shooting in America.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And a father of one of the victims who was really quite prolific in helping prevent mass shootings. He dedicated everything in his life to that after the massacre. And he's been found dead in his office building. And it seems to have been a suicide.
Nice.
He was a neuroscientist, and he was the father of 6-year-old Aviel Richman, who was among 20 children killed and 6 adults killed in the Sandy Hook Elementary School shooting. Can you believe it was in 2012 already? And not only that, this is quite weird, but his death is the 3rd suicide in the past week related to school massacres.
That is so sad.
Yeah. There's no other details, and police aren't going to disclose any other details on this. It's a closed family issue. But it just shows you how long these feelings go on after the incident.
Oh, sure.
And how a family is affected.
Can you imagine losing a
forever?
Kid? Oh, no, it must be awful.
And as much as he took a positive stance and tried to make something positive out of it, underneath, he was probably just still reeling and battling to deal with this.
Yeah.
Well, you could always opt for much more interesting and fun entertainment with The Real Housewives of Johannesburg. And we have Crystal Kane here with us this morning. We said we'd get her back, and we stay true to our word.
Yeah.
So what other things are you up to at the moment?
Well, I've been really busy in the office, actually.
You're still lawyering?
No, not that much.
The businesswoman.
I've been doing a lot of rebranding. Yeah, it's just never ending.
Yeah.
And just getting in, getting stuck in, getting ready for more projection, more business, etc.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I've just been office bound for the last 2 months, but looking forward to getting out there doing some new stuff. I'm doing a lot of image consulting for corporates and for individuals
as
well.
Any celebrities?
Yeah, celebrities all the way. No one lately, but guys, if you're interested,
How do we find out more about your business, get hold of you?
Well, you can find my image consulting on crystalk.co.za. That's my website.
K-A-Y?
Yeah, crystal as in C-H-R-I-S-T-A-L-L.
Right.
K-A-Y. .co.za.
Mm-hmm.
And then also I've been working on my music.
I remember we played some of your song the last time you were here.
Yes, that's Wonder. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to be releasing a new single very soon. So that's still top secret, but that's going to be happening.
Very good.
And also just rebranding there, getting my EPK looking fantastic. And enjoying the whole preparation stage. So.
And any high-profile fights that are on the cards? Any high-profile arguments, scraps with other housewives, any of that stuff?
Well, we've had time to simmer down now, you know. It's been ages since I last saw everybody. And I still think that the venom is probably still in existence.
Sure.
It's just a matter of... You know, well, some of them, coming together.
You're trying to sell one of your houses because you want to move, but a lot of these girls don't even have money. Shame.
Well, that's what it seemed the last time. I can't comment on that, of course. But yeah, I do think that only 2 of the housewives really had houses proper.
Yes, shame.
You know what I'm saying?
Poverty is a real thing. So what are you doing for fun, like weekends? Do you get time off? Do you go away? Who are you hanging with? What kind of stuff are you getting up to?
Yeah, so I'm thinking of perhaps going to Dubai quite soon.
You like Dubai?
The next 2 weeks.
Well, yeah. For the shopping, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right. Okay.
And then just generally going out, doing quite a few ladies' nights and
What do these ladies' nights consist of? Are we having fancy cocktails and everyone dresses up? And what do you do? Is there dancing and there's music?
Yeah,
and
all those things, you know, having a good time, trying to keep it on the straight and narrow as much as possible.
How? Why would you do that? I mean, you're allowed to have fun.
Yeah, no, I love dancing, so sure. Whenever there's a dance floor, I'm up there, getting my hair down and
anywhere
going
in particular in Joburg that you like to go? kinds of parties, these ladies' nights?
Yeah, well, I'm not going to give all that away.
Give some of it away.
Then I'm going to be doing a whole lot of advertising that people need to pay me for.
Fair enough. All right, I get you. All right, well, Crystal, it's always good to see you. Thanks for joining us this morning. We've got an episode of Blind History coming up next, starring Pharaoh Ramses II from 1300 BC. We've dug him up. We've brought him in.
Yeah, you really dug deep for this one.
Put him on the show. Yeah, if you're a history fan, this is for you.
That's amazing. I am. I actually believe I had a previous life in Egypt.
And what was this life?
I actually talk about Ramses.
Really?
I actually had like a connection. I had a dream that I was actually reincarnated from Ramses. So how's that?
My God.
Pharaoh, Crystal.
You better be listening.
What a coincidence. Yeah.
All right. There we go. So if that isn't reason enough to listen, then I don't know what is. All right. We will see you tomorrow between 6 and 9 o'clock. Here is Blind History, Episode 7, and there's more to come. It's a whole series. If you want to find out about that and any of our other series, go to cliffcentral.com and check it out today. I met a traveler from an antique land who said, "Two vast and trunkless legs of stone stand in the desert. Near them, on the sand, half sunk, a shattered visage lies, whose frown and wrinkled lip and sneer of cold command tell that its sculptor well those passions read, which yet survive, stamped on these lifeless things, the hand that mocked them and the heart that fed." And on the pedestal these words appear: "My name is Ozymandias, King of Kings. Look on my works, ye mighty, and despair. Nothing beside remains. Round the decay of that colossal wreck, boundless and bare, lone and level sands stretch far away." That's Percy Shelley's Ozymandias. He based the poem on Ramses II, the greatest of Egypt's New Kingdom pharaohs. There are statues of him that are so big that no human vehicles can move them, and they were carved out of rock 3,310 years ago. His mark on civilization is bigger than all of them. We learnt that Shelley poem from a history teacher I had at primary school called Mr. Little. And he got us all really enthusiastic about history. Every lesson was like a dramatic Greek tragedy or a comedy. And every character came to life. It was spectacular. I'm with Anthony Medera, and we're busy talking history, blind history. Who got you interested in history?
I've always loved stories and different types of stories. And, you know, if you read fiction and then you read a lot of nonfiction and history particularly, I mean, it just blows it away. It's incredible what we've done. I mean, what humans have done over the years. It's just phenomenal. And you can learn so much from the past, and it guides you to not go somewhere or to go somewhere in the future. So I think that's where I got it. And jokingly, I've always said to people, and maybe try to shock people, that I was Julius Caesar reincarnated.
Uh-huh.
And I still get a sore back every now and then when they stab me in the heart of March. I keep a straight face, and some people think I've really lost it, especially in a board meeting or something.
Well, wherever it comes from, history isn't just the stories, because we know that these things actually happened. That's what I find so fascinating. So, Ramses II, the great Pharaoh of the New Kingdom, the most powerful king in ancient Egyptian history, certainly recorded history. Everything we know about him comes from hieroglyphs on stone and from the few paintings and tombs that we can find. His great temples of Karnak and Luxor are still there. The Ramesseum is still around. But even though this guy lived 3,300 odd years ago, there are no written sources aside from those in stone that we can quote. So even though he's as old as that, the most amazing thing about him is that you can actually go and visit him, like the actual guy.
It's incredible. Is that the only one, Gareth?
No, there are lots of mummies. But if you compare him to some of the other people we've covered in this series, you can't find their bodies. I mean, even Shaka Zulu, we don't know where he's buried. But we know exactly who Ramses was, where his body is, what he looked like, what color his hair was, what the shape of his nose was. And he's 3,300 years dead.
And is it correct that a farm boy found him because they moved his body?
That's fascinating. I didn't actually know that. It's quite possible. I mean, the Valley of the Kings was mostly unexplored until the 1920s, so it's quite possible that some guy leading his goats around.
Yeah, because what I heard was that there was looters, but already BCE at the time where they were grave looters. And then later on, they've got priests to look after the tombs because they were very worried about it. And in turn, the priests also started looting.
Yeah, and what's amazing about the mummy of Ramesses II is every time it was moved, they recorded it in the linings around his mummy. So in the actual bandages, they would record mummies moved X date to this place from here because of the Egyptians were methodical record keepers. And this is where it gets interesting because we'll get into the life of Ramesses in a second, but the Pharaoh of the Exodus is supposed to have been Ramesses or his father Seti. But the Egyptians, ironically, kept absolutely no record of their Hebrew slaves. So people are kind of torn as to whether or not there's an actual recorded history of the Exodus or whether it's just religious mythology. Because the Egyptians would have made a note of exactly where the mummy moved. You're telling me they wouldn't have written down that thousands of slaves just crossed the sea and escaped? I think they would have made a mention of that
Definitely.
At some point. So it's interesting. That's where history and mythology overlap slightly.
Just talking about it before we actually get to his early life was the procession when he finally passed away and taking him down the Nile to the Valley of the Kings. And then now, I'm not too sure how many years, going back up the Nile with his mummy, back up the Nile to the Egyptian Museum.
Now that's
and with thousands of people on the banks mourning him when he 3,300 years ago, and then thousands of people on the banks of the Nile now as his body's going back up.
Two funerals.
Yeah.
I don't know how many people in history have had that. But in 1974, when they visited his tomb, they noticed the condition of the mummy was deteriorating, and they flew it to Paris for examination. And he was issued an Egyptian passport, because whether you're alive or dead, if you leave Egypt, you have to get a passport. And it listed his occupation as king, deceased. His mummy was received at the airport in France with full military honors befitting a king. And then it was taken for preservation. It was tested, and they determined that hair, astonishingly preserved, showed some complementary data about his pigmentation. He was a ginger-haired, light-skinned person. Isn't that interesting?
Mm.
So we think of pharaohs of ancient Egypt as being these very white, very dark-haired depictions. But in actual fact, he had red hair. And he came from a family of redheads, which is a rare thing. It's more than just cosmetic significance, though. In ancient Egypt, if you had red hair, you were associated with the deity Set, the slayer of Osiris, and was actually the inspiration for the name of his father, Seti I, which means follower of Set. So they also revealed during this examination that there were battle wounds, old fractures, arthritis, poor circulation, bad teeth, and that he might have died from any of these things. Isn't that amazing?
It is amazing. And you know, the battle wounds are what I found so incredible about these podcasts we're doing is all the people, or a lot of the people that we're talking about, they actually were at the forefront of these battles.
Yeah, I mean, Ramesses, he's depicted in the walls of Karnak Temple as fighting all on his own. But he actually did fight a whole tribe of Nubians on his own in his chariot with his army still behind him because he rode up ahead of them. So these guys actually did. They weren't just commanders, you know, standing on the edge of the battle giving instructions. These guys went to war, and he did get injured. And in one of the battles, he was rushed back to Egypt for medical attention. These guys really fought. So a couple of things about him. Successes in the kingdom, and Egyptians ever since have called him the great ancestor. And that poem Ozymandias comes from his Egyptian name, which is Usermatre, which means born of Ra. And his cartouche, which is the way that Egyptians used to write a name. It's basically the hieroglyphs inside a circle with a flat base, is on pretty much everything in ancient Egypt, because what pharaohs would do is they'd go around and just stamp their cartouche on everything to say, this is me, this is mine, whether they'd built it or not.
A little bit egotistical, yeah.
Just a little.
Yeah.
He did go on several military expeditions. You mentioned how he fought in battle. So he actually conquered Canaan, and conquered modern-day Syria, but it didn't just happen. It took him a long time to fight people called the Hittites who lived in Syria.
The one battle that led to the very first peace treaty that's recorded.
Isn't that fascinating?
Yeah,
so this peace treaty apparently is written in Egyptian and Akkadian. So in the Hittite version, it says the Egyptians came to us and asked for peace. In the Egyptian version, it says the Hittites came to us and asked for peace. But otherwise, it's exactly the same. And it was written on a silver tablet. And then Ramesses took it and transcribed it onto the walls of Karnak as well.
But there was also a lot of propaganda that I read of how he, you know, on the walls, he promotes definitely how they won that war.
Yeah.
And it was, in all intents and purposes, the greatest chariot fight of all time. Thousands and thousands of chariots, and basically everybody died.
Yeah.
You know, there's just a few people that survived on both sides.
Yeah, good old ancient battle where the body count was high.
Very high, yeah.
So a couple of other interesting things about him is he married many times his favorite wife and consort called Nefertari, and with her he produced many sons. They all fought with him in battle. Some of them survived, some of them didn't. And he died at 90 or 91 years old, which is extraordinary because you think about someone 3,300 years ago living that long, and it seems almost impossible. He also died peacefully, which was near impossible in those days. So maybe human lifespan hasn't really increased. It's just all about how well you manage to survive battles and depredations and starvation and famine and disease.
It's incredible. I mean, 90 years old, it doesn't make sense. You know, but, I mean, that's what happened. If we look at a lot of the people we talk about, 50, 60 is the age.
Yeah.
So 90s, they really must have thought, there's something special about this person.
Now, he became prince regent of Egypt at 14. So he had a very busy state life. He didn't exactly have a childhood. Became prince regent and carried on reigning for some 60, 70 years. Which is extraordinary. And his father, Seti I, was very happy for him to take on responsibilities at a very early age because he seemed to have a natural gift for it. Did you find him interesting?
Parts of it. You know, his afterlife I found very interesting.
Yeah.
I think, as you mentioned, it's very difficult, you know, deep descriptions. If we look at other greats like Alexander and Julius Caesar, they loved themselves so much, they wrote so much about themselves. But there's not a lot of information, or very little information that you can find. You know, when I spoke to you a little bit in the beginning, you know, that does build excitement on it. But out of the ones we've been talking about, not the most interesting.
So not your favorite
not
so far.
Not my favorite.
Well, let me try and give you an idea of the stretch of time we're talking about here. So Ramesses was probably the biggest builder since the guy who built the pyramids, Cheops or Khafren, or whatever the name is. There are various pronunciations, Khafre, and they all refer to one or two rulers in the Old Kingdom who would have built the pyramids. The pyramids were already 1,600 years old by Egyptological standards by the time Ramesses was there. That means that if you had to look back on our history the way that Ramesses looked back on the pyramids, it was 1,600 years for him means we would be in 419 AD if we just dated ourselves back to the same period of time that he looked on the pyramids as. And that means that we would have been looking at the period around the sacking of Rome by the Huns during the reign of Valentinian III. I mean, this is ancient, ancient stuff for us. There are no contemporary records of that.
It puts it in perspective, big time.
That's a long stretch of time. So Egypt had already been 1,600 odd years old by the time Ramesses came along. That's extraordinarily long in the period of human history.
Yeah, I think it's...
It's crazy, right? Absolutely insane. I can't stretch my mind to accommodate that.
Have we got any information on the preceding Ramesses, deep worth information?
Yeah, there are a lot of very well-known pharaohs who are as well documented as he is. But there's a long period of ancient Egyptian history which is completely empty. And those Old Kingdom pharaohs, we know so little about them that they're not even sure that the pyramids are around the time that they're supposed to have been built. Some people say that they could be 10,000 years old, which would be even more mind-bending. To go back to him, he built factories for that Hittite war. And by the way, he had an army of about 100,000 men, which was pretty enormous in those days. He had a factory built that made 1,000 weapons a week, 250 chariots every 2 weeks, and 1,000 shields in 1.5 weeks. So this was some serious manufacturing going on then. You know, with your factories, how much you guys produce.
Yeah, exactly.
That's not bad.
That's excellent.
So at least, even if you didn't find him as interesting as Alexander, you got to give him credit for being a good manufacturer as someone who's seen this happen on the factory floor on your
but
own.
Maybe we need to create some wars to drive the economy.
He also combated pirates and managed to fool them. There were a whole lot of pirates who used to raid the ships that left from the Nile Delta to the Mediterranean. And he managed to defeat them in battle by tricking them. Pirates, obviously not very smart, but he was smarter. And he really had this very, very successful reign. And he built tons of monuments and temples and cities. And he founded whole new regions of Egypt. He conquered Nubia, conquered Libya. So there was a vast empire.
So expanded the empire significantly.
By a long way. And his new capital was a place called Pi Ramesses, which is actually where that statue is that Shelley based the Ozymandias poem on.
Where is that in modern day Egypt?
It's in Cairo, but it's just to the southeast of Cairo.
Okay.
And people say that he founded the capital, his new capital there, because he wanted to be closer to his new conquests in the east. But who knows? I mean, so much of this is conjecture.
But the Nile is the most productive river. I mean, if you look at ancient times,
wow,
all the actions around the eastern Mediterranean, it's just phenomenal.
Yeah. And to think that that empire lasted for another 1,000 years after he died, that's got to be the longest lived, you know, sustained period of human culture. Ancient Egypt, and we think of it as being something that's in the very distant past, and for a short while, it's just epic. It's the same distance in time as between us and Jesus.
Yeah, that's phenomenal.
So there he is, the great emperor Ramesses II, from 1303 BC to 1213 BC. I know it goes backwards, it's very confusing for people.
And a lot of children, Gary.
Lots of children. So you used the term BCE. What does that mean as opposed to BC, which is before Christ?
Before the Common Era.
Okay.
I think historians are using that, it seems, more and more now.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Blind History, brought to you by Taylor Blinds and Shutters.
This is CliffCentral.com.